Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Fremantle Press podcast. I'm Claire Miller and it is my great pleasure to introduce to you Sharon Booth. Sharon's manuscript, The Silence of Water, is one of three unpublished manuscripts in the running to win the 2020 City of Fremantle Hungerford Award. Sharon Booth was born in Yorkshire and emigrated with her family to Western Australia in the 1970s. Her fiction and creative non-fiction have been published in The Australian, Southerly, Link and other journals and been broadcast on the ABC Radio. Her short fiction has been recognised in the annual Catherine Susanna Pritchard Writers' Centre Short Fiction Competition. She's also a former writer in residence at KSP and has recently completed her PhD. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you, Claire.
So describe your manuscript for us.
Well, The Silence of Water is about a big family secret and what it takes to cover up that secret over generations and what might happen if that secret is exposed. It's based on the life of a convict, Edwin Salt, who was transported to Western Australia in the 1860s. He was convicted of the very brutal murder of his wife, Mary Ann. He was sentenced to hang, but just a few days before his execution date, his sentence was commuted to penal servitude for life. And that was mostly because he was said to have suffered extreme provocation because Mary Ann was a heavy drinker, said to be a bad mother, and that was the attitudes of the time. In Western Australia, he starts a new life. He marries again, marries an Irish widow. He has a family, including a daughter, Agnes. And years later, Agnes is living very peacefully in Adelaide with her own family, including her daughter, Fan, Edwin's granddaughter.
So tell us about Fan.
Well, Fan is your typical sort of 13, 14-year-old. She doesn't think about life. She loves her life. She loves to go to the beach with the family. She loves to swim. She's just really very happy and doesn't really think too much about anything. One day, Agnes, her mum, basically out of the blue, says to her, well, we're all moving to Fremantle. I have to go home, take care of my dad. And Fan has never heard this man's name mentioned before in her life. So the family moves to Fremantle and Fan hates it there. She's unsettled and she, in a way to really irritate her mother, she forms a bit of an unlikely friendship with her grandfather. Then almost by accident, as they chat, they get to know each other, she starts to kind of find out more about his past. So The Silence of Water is about secrets, but it's also about exile and where home is and the many ways we can all find ourselves somewhere that we don't want to be. As Edwin says to Fan when they're chatting one day, he says, well, we've both been transported against our will. So it's a family story, but I hope it also has something to say about Western Australia and our understanding of who we might be because of those lies and omissions in our state's history.
Mm. And what brought you to the story? What inspired you to write it?
Well, it was just after the time of Kate Grenville's novel, The Secret River, and I was doing some research about a prison warder who'd lived in Western Australia in the early days of the colony. And I became fascinated by the fact that there were about 10,000 convicts who were transported to Western Australia, but no one really talked about them. In the 1870s, it was estimated that around one in two men in Fremantle had arrived here as convicts. So imagine you're walking down South Terrace today, you're going to get a coffee and knowing that every second person you see is actually trying to start a new life after committing a crime. So I found this really fascinating. The common assumption was that convicts all either left the colony or they just died, but many married and had families and they started new and very ordinary lives here. And I really wanted to know their stories. And more importantly, I really wanted to know about stories of the women that they married. You know, I wanted to know, they must have known those women, they must have known about the convict origins of their new husbands. And in those days, marriage offered protection and security for a woman. So how much would I want to know about that man's past? And I found those questions really interesting. Again, the common story about convicts is that they were all kind of jolly, good-hearted. They were kind of sheep stealers, you know, but many were not. Edwin Salt wasn't one of those. He was not a particularly likable man. He was smart and literate. He'd never committed a crime before. He had a good job, but he was a drinker. He was arrogant and he was at times a bully. And some newspaper reports had said he and Mary Ann were childhood sweethearts, and yet he ended up killing her. So I just became really interested in their story and in Mary Ann's story in particular. And I just became obsessed with what it would be like to have that big of a secret, what sort of toll it would take on Edwin and everyone around him, and then what might happen if his family found out.
You mentioned newspaper articles. Yeah. It sounds like there was a lot of research that went into the manuscript.
Yes, there was.
Yeah. How long did it take you to get the manuscript to the point where you wanted to put it in the Hungerford Award?
Well, that is a very good question, and it's a very embarrassing answer. I actually started this in 2007 as part of my PhD, and I finished it last year. I wasn't working on it the whole time, as I'm always pointing out, but that's kind of how long it's been in my life. I started with research, as you said, Claire, State Records Office and the Batty Library, then the National Archives in London, old boxes of documents and, you know, the whole thing, research rooms and whispered voices and white gloves and pencils and no cameras and traipsing around a lot of graveyards. I did a lot of that and looking for old houses. I actually gave up for about maybe 4 years, maybe almost 5 years. I just gave up, quit the whole project. I moved house several times, took all of the files with me, and I would occasionally go and stand in the room where all the files were and say, well, come on, if you're done with this, you need to throw them away or something. But I couldn't do that. And of course, they were characters in my head the whole time. So I made the decision then to go back and finish the job, and finished at the end of last year and just graduated on Saturday.
Well, congratulations on graduating.
Thank you.
And congratulations on finishing the manuscript all of that time.
Thank you.
How does it feel to now be on the shortlist and in the running for the City of Fremantle Hungerford Award?
Well, it's amazing. It's fantastic. And it's a huge honour when you look at Hungerford alumni. It is a massive, massive honour. And of course, for me personally, it means there's the possibility of my book getting published. I really believed in this story as a story worth telling about Western Australia. And that's what the Hungerford is about. It's about finding and seeking out new stories, new West Australian stories. To be on the shortlist, what that means is that this is a story that has been judged as being worth telling about where we live and who we are. I'm most proud of that, really.
And you mentioned Hungerford alumni.
Mm-hmm.
We're really proud of the fact that we're in the 30th year. We're celebrating our anniversary, so that's extra special.
Yes.
Were you influenced by people?
I've loved all of Simone Lazarou's novels. Gail Jones, I've just actually finished reading Holden Shepherd's amazing book. But in terms of which, I wouldn't say there would be one, but I think what I would say is that I really admire them all, because to write a novel is a massive act of faith. It's a huge act of faith. You know, you set out on day one, page one, and you know that there's a really big possibility that it will never see the light of day. And yet you try to keep going. And what the Hungerford does is it nurtures those fledgling writers and gives us new writers a reason to keep going and to keep turning up at the page. You know, now, because all of those writers kept going and produced that amazing work and then went on to write wonderful novels beyond that, we've got this amazing literary heritage that might just never have happened without the Hungerford.
I was just listening to a podcast this morning and they mentioned Louise Allen, who was shortlisted and went on to be published.
Yes,
and
she
said every time you start a new novel, you're back to the start.
Yes.
But I do think having won the Hungerford, in a way, it makes you accountable. I think people expect a second novel, and I wonder if that spurs some of the writers on.
Oh, I would say it would. Everyone says that when you sit down to start something new, it's that act of faith. And so what the Hungerford does is it's just a bit, it's encouragement. It says, this is worth doing. Keep going. You have something to say. So that heart that you put into it and that investment of time and energy and just the love that you put into that work is really important, and we want you to keep doing it.
And now I'm really excited because you brought along a reading
for
us. Tell us a bit about it.
Okay. This is Edwin and Mary Ann's wedding day, and there is a bedroom scene at the end. So
excellent.
I thought I should just flag that ahead of time, but this is their wedding day, and Mary Ann is with Eliza, who is Edwin's sister. They were married on a freezing November day in the small church of St. Peter in Birmingham. Mary Ann wore a once white, loose-fitting dress, not really a dress for weddings or for winters, but Mrs. Blunt hadn't minded giving it away. Eliza took in the waist and took up the hem. "See, it's custom made for you," Eliza said. "You should open your own shop," Mary Ann said, and both women laughed loudly at such an absurdity. Eliza stitched a yellow silk rose to Mary Ann's waist. "It almost matches your hair. You look perfect." There was nobody at St. Peter's when they arrived. "It's bad luck to be early," Mary Ann said. "Rubbish. Superstition," Eliza said. "Besides, I want to draw you. Goodness knows when there'll ever be another proper bride in the family." Eliza positioned Mary Ann in the doorway. The crisp early morning sun made her hair shine. "I've never been drawn before," Mary Ann said. "How long is this going to take? It's freezing in this damn dress." "Serves you right for getting married in November," Eliza said. "Edwin got his first transfer, a promotion, he says. He don't want to leave me behind." "Well, of course he doesn't," Eliza said. "Now smile, please." Mary Ann grimaced. "I mean, smile properly," Eliza said. "I'm trying to stop my teeth from chattering." Eliza drew big, sweeping pencil strokes over the paper. Mary Ann shuffled and sighed, but she didn't complain. "Here you go. See, I missed my calling." Eliza gave Mary Ann the picture. "Call it a wedding present." Mary Ann smiled at the sight of herself as a bride, a long train tangling with her hair in a curly frame around the edges of the paper, her husband in a smart suit with his arm around her waist. "You got Edwin perfect and he's not even here," Mary Ann said. "Well, he's always looked the same," Eliza said. "I've been looking at him all my life." "Thanks for standing up for me," Mary Ann said. "I got nobody else." "Do you know what to expect?" Eliza asked. "Oh, I've been in Birmingham a long time," Mary Ann's face coloured. "It pays to know enough to keep out of trouble." Edwin could see the fine hair on Mary Ann's forearms bristle with cold. She looked ghost-like, white, shimmery, the sunlight bouncing off her hair. He wanted to get the wedding part over and take her to his room. He wanted to uncoil her hair, touch her bare shoulders, scoop his hands into the absence of flesh that was the curve from her ribs to her hips. On Edwin's side of the church, Da in his best suit, Mam in her good hat, his sister Mary eyeing off his friend William Neville, and a dozen or so excise men who came to cheer him along. His two brothers were at the front, standing up for him. Samuel, George and Edwin, the three salt boys, identical brown eyes, identical brown hair, small, medium and large. Cut from the same cloth, Dar joked, but everyone except Edwin smiled. On Mary Ann's side, Mr. Blunt, the brass founder, and Mrs. Blunt. The minister nodded. Mary Ann held her head high and began her long walk into the sea of his witnesses. Later, she cried, but not with fear. She opened herself eagerly to him, and afterwards he watched her as she slept in a smudgy light. Her lips were plump and blood red from all the kissing. He stroked her breast and she quivered, her eyes still shut while the feeling awoke her. He took another swig from the gin bottle and buried his face in her beautiful hair. She moved her hand underneath him. His last thought before the tide of feeling overtook them both, "You are my wish."
Thank you so much. That was Sharon Booth reading from The Silence of Water. Sharon is one of three writers shortlisted for the 2020 City of Fremantle Hungerford Award. This year is extra special to us because we'll be celebrating the Hungerford's 30th anniversary. Our winner will be announced at Fremantle Arts Centre on Thursday, the 22nd of October, and tickets are available from fremantlepress.com.au. Please join us for a night of bookish celebrations. And for more great interviews with authors and industry insiders, subscribe to the Fremantle Press podcast on your favourite podcast app. I'm Claire Miller, and thanks for tuning in today.